This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Hey, welcome everybody to this week's edition of the Ticket City Podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum, joined today by everybody. Everybody's here, the entire Orange Bloods lineup. Alex, Anwar, Dustin, Jason. Fellas, football practice starts in a few weeks. Actually, before we go too far in, I know my microphone doesn't sound as good as it should. I'm working on it. I'll talk less in this podcast. Luckily, Alex, Anwar, Dustin, and Jason all have their correct microphones in front of them. It will sound so much better than me. Fellas, practice scheduled to start on Friday. The Big 12 announces this week that it's going to a 10-game schedule, although the details of which, how the non-conference games are going to work and the timing of it all seems to still be somewhat a bit of a mystery. There's been a commitment today. There's actually a lot of stuff for, we don't have to try hard today to come up with an hour of podcast content, methinks. So Anwar, I'll start with you. Where's you in a week where there's been news, right? Certainly we know a little bit more about what the 2020 season will look like going in. Where's your head at with regard to all the stuff that there's out there to talk about?
Well, don't forget there's also the Arizona grad transfer linebacker who was in town yesterday, still in town on Thursday. And then he'll head back. He can't really have contact with the coaches, but they could just point him out to different places he could visit in Austin and go on a kind of a self-guided tour. You know, it's interesting because from a Big 12 perspective, it seemed like a long wait for nothing. I didn't see, you know, and people will defend it and say, well, they should have waited. And it's there's a benefit of waiting. I don't see what the benefit is. It's not like the virus is going anywhere or we're going to have a vaccine within 2 weeks. So there was other conferences that were able to make a definite decision several weeks ago, other conferences that have put out schedules already. So, you know, the Big 12 kind of went to a model that we, for the most part, expected. I know I predicted that in my Sunday column. So, yeah, the 9+1 with the non-conference game, you know, you still have got, if you're Texas, you've got USF, you got, you know, you also got UTEP. You know, the thing about that, Ketch, is that it's not for the most part that you're just going to tell these schools, one of them, like, hey, you're good. Like, you still got to pay these schools something, right? And you still got to find a way to make that disappear. So, you know, Texas still has to figure out what they're going to do. I do know something I'll have in the war room on Thursday night, depending on when people listen to it. The thought process from within the building is that, look, if they can get UTEP on the September the 12th, you know, that Saturday as their season opener, and then go to K-State, you know, a few weeks later, that would kind of be the ideal situation for them. It would give them, you know, that 2 weeks of, you know, teaching, learning, 2 weeks, like just in case there was a COVID case, you have 2 weeks of recovery. But, you know, that would be like the ideal situation for them going forward to start off there, then get into conference play. So, you know, overall, it seems like we're still moving towards the start of a football season. Within a little bit of time, like we said, football practice, training camp, really, it begins on Friday. And I'll have a little bit more in the war room as far as the details and what that looks like as far as what the next couple of weeks will be. But, you know, you start off slow before you get into that. The first practice will be, scrimmage, that's the word I'm looking for. First scrimmage will be on the 15th of August. So next Saturday will be the first scrimmage. So there's a lot of things going on as we kind of start getting this ball rolling downhill.
Why the hell is the Big 12? I mean, have we heard anything? You see the ACC announced their schedule today. I mean, have we heard when the Big 12 is going to announce their conference schedule? It's so freaking frustrating, man. Nope. Like, I'm sure the coaches would love to plan, but hell, even as media members, I mean, how are you got travel, if you're going to be traveling, I don't even know. But, I mean, you know, it'd kind of be nice to have a plan in place, but they are always behind on everything. It's so damn frustrating.
Well, it's interesting, though, Jason, because you said it, because when you look at the Big 12 press release, right, they've said that the we know that the Big 12 title game is scheduled for December the 5th.
With some flexibility.
Yeah. But then it said with the schedule, we can flex it out to the 12th or the 19th. So yeah. There's a schedule somewhere, right? You didn't just come up with that arbitrarily. Like you have it somewhere. You just haven't shared it with any of your member schools. It's because you had to tell the president something in order for this whole thing to fly. So it is out there. It's just, but to your point, the Big 12 is just always a step behind everybody else.
Yeah, it's like they are not leaders in any form or fashion. It seems like
leader from behind.
You know what I thought, and I'm maybe I'm just wrong. Like this may be I assumed, but the Big 10 put out its schedule. I guess I just assumed, like, they changed it, right? They moved some stuff around. I've been under the assumption that the Big 12 would just keep its schedule the way it's currently scheduled and that they would just wipe out the non-conference and everybody would have a month window or a three-week window or whatever it is to play that non-conference game, but then everything else would stay the same. It wasn't until the Big 10 put out a schedule. Was that yesterday?
Yes.
Where I was like, oh, this is really smart. They've completely repackaged the entire season.
Yeah, it gives us some flexibility and open weeks.
What makes us think the Big 12 has done that?
Like, nothing gives me that confidence, exactly. Like,
in my mind, they're just – because I've been thinking about Oklahoma. Their first game is on in August, at least we think –
tentatively.
They're playing a game in August.
They're not playing that game in August.
But they're practicing like they are.
Oh, they totally juked the system.
Oh.
They totally worked it in their favor.
They did. We knew it. Yeah. We knew that this was going to happen. And they did too. And it really makes the juggling. They've known what the Big 12 is going to do, and they made a public show they were going to move their game so that they could practice earlier. I think that that's fantastic. Kudos to them. Hey,
I'm looking at the ACC schedule that came out today. They're starting their conference games on September 12th, which by moving that up gives every single team 2 open weeks, so you have some flexibility with the schedule. So
yeah.
The Big 12 might just be dumb enough to keep their current schedule, but they should be following what everybody else is doing and moving the conference games up, which gives them some flexibility within the conference, you know, in case things go haywire. Because as it stands right now, Texas isn't scheduled to start Big 12 play till October 3rd. And I don't think – do they have an off week? I don't think they do once they get into conference.
No, so, the way their schedule
is. No, they don't. Yeah, so that's just that's catastrophic. It's just stupid. Big 12, get off your ass and make a schedule and release it. How hard is it?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's really hard. I don't know.
Maybe they've been doing it. I mean, it's just crazy that it's been months, right? I mean, they literally have been sitting around for months trying to figure this thing out. And then when it's kind of getting close, they're like, yeah, man, we don't know. We just kind of keep pushing it back. So we'll see at some point. But, you know, if you're Texas, you still got to figure out if you're only going to do one non-conference, you still got to figure out the USF versus UTEP and get the logistics as far as that is concerned.
And I will say this, if that game is played in the middle of September, whether it's the 12th or the 19th, it gives Texas 5 weeks of preparation that should allow – there shouldn't be any excuses, right? They haven't had a spring. They haven't – we've talked so much this year about the eight ball that Texas is behind because – unlike a TCU who had, what, like 7 or 8 or 9 practices, and I think Oklahoma had – like Texas never had a spring. Oklahoma started out in front of them, and like Texas still hasn't had a practice. But if it goes the way that it appears to be going, then Texas starting on Friday essentially has 5 weeks, potentially, at least 4, to get itself into football-playing shape. I think that eliminates some of the – I mean, just doesn't feel like they're cramming 15 practices and then a preparation week into the first game. They've got a little bit more time to let putting this team together breathe a little bit. I think that's a positive for Texas. I think you could make the case, given the circumstances that have already unfolded, that eliminating two games, starting back in the middle of September, and giving Tom Herman and this staff a chance to really put Humpty Dumpty back together again would have been the best path for this team going into this season. I think eliminating the Texas fans don't want to hear it because some of them are convinced that they absolutely would have won that game, even though Anwar did an article recently that pointed out how terrible Texas has been in non-conference, especially on the road. I think this sets up well for Texas. Just lobbing that into the podcast fear.
I think we're all in agreement. It's a bizarre situation to try to navigate where I guess people have just been kind of tiptoeing around and trying to figure out the best way to plan this. But yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing for Texas. If you're looking, you know, just at that long extended period leading up to the season, I mean, you kind of, you know, hey, this is when we can build this thing and build towards the season, as opposed to maybe, you know, a starting and stopping, or if you had maybe a week in the spring or 2 weeks and that was kind of cut short or whatever it is. I think ideally, once you report, which I believe the report date is, I think, today. And once you get going, you're going and you're going and you're going and you're going with the season in sight. But you have all of that time to like, okay, we can maybe use this initial part as the evaluation and building our depth chart and then all the installation type stuff in the beginning and then really gear it up towards the season. So, yeah, I don't think it's a bad scenario for Texas considering it's just been a really difficult situation to navigate.
Alex, you got any thoughts on this before we change topics?
No. I want to see the schedule. I understand that we got Brett McMurphy tweeting just now. Penn State announces no fans will be allowed at home games this season. So that's a new one. I'd like to see the schedule. I understand that it's probably a pain to put it together. And like I talked about last week, the Big 12 seems to be moving slow. I don't know if they're moving slow because they want to see what everybody else is doing or if they want to if they even have a plan. You know, it's like with the big – I don't even know what the Big 12 does really anymore. I wish Texas would get out of it.
Hey, real quick before Anwar, I ask you about this linebacker that I think Texas would do well to secure if they can. What the hell do we think is actually going – there's a really interesting battle. And this isn't me turning the podcast political or anything like that. It is acknowledging the elephant in the room following what Alex just mentioned about the Brett McMurphy tweet about Penn State. Texas wants to get 25% capacity. And I mean, they keep saying it. They could be saying, well, we don't know. But they're saying they went from 50% to 25%. And you've got the mayor of Austin saying, we don't want you to have anybody inside the stadium. And the University of Texas is like, well, hey, man, we appreciate that. But you don't
it doesn't make a shit what you say, Adler.
Exactly. They're like, look, the state of Texas is telling us we can do this, and since you don't boss us around, we may be in Austin, but we're our own little entity. We're going to do whatever the hell that we want to do. It just sets up a really we're not there yet. But when we get to the week of the game, my anticipation is that if Texas still plans on having people in the stands, same thing with Texas A&M, anybody. Like, that's going to be a big story. Am I crazy?
No, it's heading towards – I mean, you're going to have a lot of people voicing a lot of opinions, a lot of powerful people, and – you know, this whole seating capacity thing, I mean, it's something I've been following closely for a while. I mean, going back to, I remember, you know, hearing about Chris Del Conte when he spoke to the Headliners Club in Austin about, you know, the plans and things like that back in late May and how things have kind of changed. And Texas has always, always planned to have fans in the stands. And, you know, I don't think Del Conte's worded that whole scenario well publicly, but I think that part of that's because he's trying to send the message and holding out hope that maybe they can salvage some of these upcoming cuts that are going to happen to the athletic department. But they've always planned on having fans. I mean, they've spent months and months with these contingency plans and 25% or 30% or a potential for 50% or whatever it is. I just have a hard time envisioning Texas doing all that work, knowing that the money that's at stake, you know, knowing what the governor said and so forth, knowing what some of these other programs are going to do as well. I have a hard time seeing them get into the, you know, second week of September. And if things are just, you know, if things aren't dramatically worse than they are with coronavirus now, I don't see Texas saying, no, we're going to listen to you and have no fans. I just don't see that happening. I think there are going to be fans there. And does that get, you know, kind of a nasty battle between, you know, Texas and even within Texas with Regents and all that sort of stuff? I don't know, but I just have a really hard time envisioning Texas saying, you know what, we agree with you, we're not going to have fans, after they've spent months and months and months coming up with all of these plans about what kind of seating capacity they could have.
Well, here's the thing, though, and again, not to make it political, and this is not to even say I am even on this side of it, right? But if you're talking about 25,000 people, this is not just 25,000 people from Austin going into one location. You're talking about 25,000 people coming from throughout the state, descending on one city. And if it somehow comes back, they're like, they start tracing and saying, well, you know, we're having large outbreaks, and it starts at UT, or they're having outbreaks that are caused at UT, or whatever the case may be, right? And again, there's people who are smarter in this than me, and again, I'm not taking one side of the fence on this, but you know, you can see that battle start waging where you have city people saying, look, these games are causing more outbreaks, and we're not doing concerts, we're not doing anything like that, so why are we doing this type of thing? The same way the city of Dallas at some point is going to have to say, okay, listen, we've already canceled, you know, the state fair. Are we really going to have 25,000, whatever the number of people coming into our city, you know, going into our hotels, restaurants, this and that, and then, dispersing, and then we're left with whatever is there. You know what I'm saying? So there, you know, there will be some sort of battle.
On the Dallas side, like, they did have that race in Dallas where they had – I think about 20,000 people in the stands. So there has been, in defense of Texas's huge position, there has been somewhat a return.
It's a lot easier to social distance 20K
at a huge ass track
at a football stadium, though. So
yeah, and I'm just, and then again, I'm not taking the side of it. I'm just saying, like, when we're talking about potential, yeah, like who the fighting, and you know, these are things we have to anticipate going forward, that somebody's going to bark and complain and saying, we're putting this many people here, and then, you know, and then service workers and this and that. Now, look, they may play games at Jerry's World, and it just is what it is. But, you know, this won't, it won't be 25,000, you know, everyone's at UT and there's a kumbaya moment. There's going to be city people that are going to complain.
I'm just, everybody who's listening, just mark that aside, because we're going to talk about all kinds of fun stuff, I think, over the course of the next month, hopefully, as this team gets ready for the season and health allows them to do that. But there will get to be a point where that thing is going to come to a head, and it will be the conversation of the day when it does. Anwar, Mr. Tony Fields, the second, good player. I mean, he's been a starter. He's been a producer at Arizona for pretty much his entire career. Undersized guy, but hella productive at a position where the Longhorns don't have a lot of returning experience and known quantities. As soon as I read this guy's pro, I can't say that I knew who the hell Tony Fields was before he started looking around. But, man, he fits the profile of a guy that could really help Texas this year. At the very least, would give them some insurance at a position where it doesn't feel like they have a lot of insurance.
Yeah, I mean, it's really not a lot. I mean, again, you know, I you know, enjoy looking at Alex's depth charts every week and just always as kind of reminders of where they are at the position. And, look, I mean, it, you know, you've got Juwan Mitchell, you got Overshown, and – then you have some guys who, you know, are behind them that, you know, still maybe a little bit in that development type role. But, you know, he's a guy that comes in that could come in and and have it first an immediate impact. I mean, it's not like they had a spring practice and he's that far behind, right? It's not like he missed out on a bunch of summer workouts. I mean, he hasn't missed out on much, to be quite honest with you. And if he's has any kind of football IQ, he would have a set amount of weeks to be able to come in and find a way to get onto that field. And especially if you're talking about, you know, moving the season back to mid-September, that gives him, a hell of a start. So, you know, my reading of the tea leaves is this. I don't think Tony Fields is hopping on a plane to come down to Austin on a, you know, kind of a self-guided tour if he doesn't have a sincere interest in playing at UT. And then when you looked at what his other offers were, I think it was West Virginia and Minnesota. I won't say offers, but
those are his final three, right?
These final three, you know, you just do the simple math, right?
He ain't going to Morgantown or he ain't getting on a plane to Minnesota, is he?
Yeah. I mean, like, he ain't flying into Pittsburgh and driving into Morgantown and seeing what that's all about. And, you know, Minnesota, like, you know,
I know what city Minnesota's in, but yeah, he's not going there wherever it is.
Nah, you know, I think he's flying into Austin for a reason, and someone is going to make sure he gets on the lake at, you know, whether it's either Wednesday or Thursday, and someone is going to would make sure, even if, you know, he couldn't see the campus, I am sure that there were players dispatched to make sure he had a good time that he can talk to. Like, I just don't think that, you know, they gave him a YouTube link and said, go visit Austin. Right. So, but
it's probably similar, Omar, what they did, like when the Ketron Jackson, the receiver, came in, he actually met up with Brennan Eagles, which I thought was interesting in itself, but, you know, they had a player kind of meet him and he could answer questions and give him a tour. And then he did go see some, he couldn't remember exactly where he saw some hill country type places, he told me. So they have a plan in place, and I think you're absolutely right. What they usually do is he'll probably FaceTime or probably did FaceTime with the coaches while he was on campus, and then he'll meet up with a player or two who they think would be a good ambassador for the program, and that'll be their recruiting efforts. But I agree with you wholeheartedly. He doesn't get on a plane and come to Austin if that decision's not pretty well made.
Yeah, Jason, if you're looking at the depth chart, what about the depth chart intimidates him for a guy who started, you know, and played major college football? He's not looking at anybody on this depth chart and saying, I can't beat out that guy. I mean, you know what I'm saying? And that's no disrespect to any of these guys but you know, we're just talking about unproven guys. We're talking about Jawan Mitchell, who still has something to prove. And, you know, we still cannot ignore that he was benched in the bowl game. You still have Overshown, who's going back to that position, who's still gaining weight and still trying to, you know, get acclimated, looking great. You still have a day away, and you have some guys who are behind them, but you're not looking at, like, man, how do you even fit in? So, you know, the one thing I heard is, like, look, at the end of the day, the best two linebackers are going to get on the field, and you know, that's kind of be the pitch. But, you know, if you're him, this is probably a really, really good situation, and then factor in that, hey, you've got a good quarterback on the other side that will give you a lot of leeway. You know, it ends up being a really good, you know, ideal situation for him.
Who's checked out the Fields mixtape on YouTube? Who's watched him play?
I haven't
watched the mixtape. I watched his game versus Washington. They already have cut-ups of his actual game, so I prefer to watch those to highlight.
But what'd you think?
So I watched that. I mean, he's better than Juwan Mitchell.
Is that a bar? Is that the bar, I guess? I mean,
it's a bar that we should probably discuss. I mean, I'm projecting Juwan Mitchell to probably start, so – I think Mitchell
that means Mitchell will be in the transfer portal the day this kid gets on campus.
He's already taken around. Did he ever go in? Was he in the round trippers?
I don't think he did.
He still has a round trip ticket.
No, he did. Yes. Did wait? Am I wrong? Yes. He did enter the portal at one point, didn't he? Yeah.
I've lost track of how many times he's.
Yes, he did. He did enter the portal.
But he was a round tripper. Yeah.
He was the first to go in and out, I thought.
Yes, he was.
Yeah,
he,
I think you're right. And then it was Okafor, and then I think Cook, I guess.
I think he has the size to play. And I think he has the size to sort of be an undersized Mike in this system, because I think that, you know, that's a guy that they'll take over to the overhang at times too, but he's clearly fast. They have him listed as 6'1", 220. So it's not like he's that much – I mean, he's about – I mean, he's taller than Juwan Mitchell. And because Juwan Mitchell, I believe, is only 6 feet tall, right? And then I can't imagine that he weighs more than 220. I would have to look on the roster and see what he's.
Well, I don't think Fields weighs 220. I don't say that in a negative way. I think he's exactly the kind of guy that we would see at Baylor do really well, right? An undersized tweener kid that moves well, though. Like, I think you look at Fields and I see a guy that covers space. I think a guy that, as an inside player, probably would play really well in the Big 12. Like, he's the prototype of a type of guy that can succeed when the field is spaced out as much as it is in this conference. But I have a hard time comparing him to anybody, right? Because if we think about – he's not Aaron Harris. He's not Rashad Bobineau.
No.
He is probably unlike any linebacker, again, off the top of my head, I can think of.
He's a little more like – what's his name from – maybe not like a taller Gary Johnson type.
Maybe.
He's his own type. He's a good player. He's long. He's lean. I think he might weigh 220. I don't know. I've never stood next to him. But if he really is 6'1", I could see him weighing 220. Ultimately, he's a guy who you would play at outside linebacker. I think what that means for DeMarvion Overshown, I don't know.
He's an inside guy. Like, he was going to start at inside linebacker in Arizona's new 3-4 defense. And the way I've heard him positioned as a transfer is that he would be an inside transfer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about what was happening in this game in 2019 versus Washington. He certainly played inside. He's definitely come off the edge too. He looks to me like a guy that if I had him inside, I would prefer to have him at the will so I could use him in those overhang types of situations. But like I said, I feel like in this defense, the more you watch it, you can use the mic in those overhang types of situations. You don't have to flip him over. And then in the Big 12, it's like, catch, it's like you said, it's a really wide open league. It's like at some point those inside positions are a little bit positionless. You can move and you can adjust based on the formation of the offense and stuff like that. It's probably good to have two of those versatile guys in. I would just hate it if they got into a situation where they're like, well, look, we know that Juwan Mitchell, even though he's undersized, he played a ton in the middle last year. We know that that's all Dele Adeyewe can even play. So if we have to get Fields in at the expense of DeMarvion Overshown, so be it. I think that you can have two players who are kind of like that on the field at the same time together. And even more to your point, if he was – if he was on pace to be the Mike in a 3-4 at Arizona State, why not have him in the middle of a defense similar to Texas, where he'll be used in more ways that can take advantage of his versatility. I like the way he moves. I like the way he runs. I like the way he comes downhill. I like the way he breaks down for the tackle, and he's a sure tackler. You like the way that he drives through and finishes. I think Fields is a good. I mean, He's a good player. He would come in and be one of the top linebackers at Texas. What year is he? Is he going to be a senior?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you got to think he'd come right in and play. Especially given everything. No one's practiced. No one's practicing in this defense. He comes in on equal footing with everybody else.
Well, surely at some point on campus, he passed his competition still in the doghouse, right?
Yeah, I guess so, man.
Like, if they're recruiting him, they just say, hey, don't worry about your competition. Technically, he still lives in the doghouse. He's not worked his way out of that. I mean, Juwan Mitchell's done nothing. Like, he literally, in the last game they played, was benched in favor of a walk-on. So, Juwan Mitchell, for me, is at the top of guys that need to prove themselves going into this camp. I mean, he didn't have a spring.
It reminds me of this thing that when I covered the Bucks years ago, it's like over 10 years ago, Raheem Morris was the coach. He used to have this saying, goes, I tolerate you until I can replace you. And that's what it sounds like with Juwan Mitchell. It's like, we'll tolerate you until we can replace you. Until we find someone who's just, we begin to find someone else to stick in for you, we'll put up with it. But the moment we can find someone else, we're good. Because the moment they thought a former walk-on linebacker was a better option, they put that guy in. So maybe that's disrespectful to Court John Quest. Maybe Court is a badass, and I'm just not giving him his damn respect. So Court, I apologize. maybe that's disrespectful to you. I apologize. I realize what I'm saying is somewhat disrespectful. But on the subject of Juwan, to your point, I don't think they would go in and say, man, this is our guy. Like, you can't top him. I think they go and say, man, if you can take him, have at it.
I actually, in just watching a little bit of this guy's skill set, I think he brings something to the table that Texas doesn't have in any of its linebackers right now. I don't know if this guy, I doubt he ever plays in the NFL, but he might. I mean, I don't know. But when I view him, he just looks like a good Big 12 linebacker. I mean, mm-hmm. he covers a lot of ground. And mm-hmm. that's the thing I don't know about Juwan Mitchell is how much, you know, I know he showed flashes of when he gets downhill and he's able to attack. He can create. He it's not that he didn't flash. I just don't know that I see a lot of linebackers on this team who are going sideline to sideline and making the necessary tackle. But Tony
and getting Scott off blocks
any, or Fields might not make any flash plays all the time, but he might make 8 tackles in a game. And if he doesn't make those 8 tackles, those 4-yard runs turn into 12-yard runs, and he just always, in watching how he plays, seems to be a guy that's around the football, and you know, he's productive. And man, productivity does have its value.
Was that a Tony Stark reference I heard in there, Catch?
Did I say Tony Stark?
Maybe not. I thought I heard Tony Stark. Maybe not.
I called him by the wrong name, but I think I called him.
I thought we were going Iron Man there for a second.
Dark. Close enough, though.
Yeah, whatever. I'm watching his film as y'all are talking, and I agree with both of you. I mean, skill set would transition perfectly for what you face. You know, Big 12 offenses, you got to be able to cover ground. You got to be able to play in space. He gets washed up in traffic a little bit, but you'd expect that from an undersized inside linebacker. But just made a great play in space as I'm watching this. I mean, really covers well. It covers ground quickly. And get upfield in a hurry when they send him towards quarterback. So be a good pickup. And I mean, bottom line is Texas, you don't have to be great at this point. Texas needs capable bodies, and Tony Fields fits that description. You know, when I was looking back at my notes when I talked to him about 3 weeks ago, he said, hey, bottom line, playing time will be the most important thing for him, which is what most senior transfers say. So I mean, I don't know Minnesota's depth chart or West Virginia's, but like Omar was saying, I mean, Texas's depth chart has to be really appealing and attractive to him. You combine that with the fact that you're just going to get a lot more exposure playing at Texas than you are at Minnesota or West Virginia. It just makes a lot of sense. He told me I was supposed to – I did call him last night, but we didn't connect. And I think he wanted this Austin trip kind of kept quiet, but it kept leaking out because he kept denying it to me like twice. He said, no, it's not true. Where's that coming from? And I'm like, dude, it's all over the place. And he just said, nope, not coming. And then Anwar confirmed that he is. But he's gone quiet on me since then. But I'll keep working on him today, see if I can maybe track him down and get some of
his. I don't think you guys are friends. I don't think you should keep tracking it down.
Not friends?
Just let it go. No, you just let it go.
Less work for me. Fine by me.
He's just not that into you, Jason. Yes,
it's not you. It's him, right?
The only time the only time he responds to me is when he wants to lie to my face. Like, that's not a good sign, is it?
Hey, real quick, just to like put this marker down, because I said this in one of the things I've written in the last couple of weeks. This dude's averaged 90 tackles a season for the last 3 seasons. Like, he's just a good football player. And I'm still at a point with Texas, especially on defense, where sign up as many good football players as you can get because they're relying on too many guys with upside. We don't say he's just a damn good football player. We just don't say that enough about Texas players. We find ourselves saying things like, if he can stay healthy, if he reaches his ceiling as a player. Fields might be at his ceiling as a player, very similar to Parker Braun, right? But, like, that guy can come in and play a role and be a good player, and Parker Braun was a year ago and will never play in the NFL, and yet, you know, that offensive line a year ago wouldn't have been as good without him. And I think that Tony Fields, the moment he steps on campus, if he does and stays and plays, I think would be a player that – would be very hard to get off the field for the Texas defensive coaches, because a guy that's going to make tackles and be exactly where he's supposed to be sounds like something this defense has been searching for all offseason, and they haven't had any practices. Jason, while you're talking, or unmute yourself, because I want to come back to the commitment. We talk about all the news from today. Texas literally got a commitment an hour and a half ago. Maybe the most discussed two-star prospect since
three-star now. He got a bump. He's up to three. So
that's right. The most discussed low three-star prospect that I can think of, and since Deontay Foreman. I don't know. He's an interesting dude with an interesting background, and I think weirdly a very vital commitment for Texas.
Absolutely. I think I'm going to write about that. Just throw some notes on when we're done with this podcast on our message board. But I like this pickup a lot, man. I really do. And I get it. He's a low three-star. He just got bumped up to that. I still think he's criminally underrated as a 5.5 Rivals ranked three-star recruit. A bit undersized, you can make that argument. Rivals have him. We have him at 6'3", 285, and I'm hoping to connect with him, Alex. You and I have talked about this, hopefully maybe even today, to kind of recap his decision. And I want – who knows how honest he'll be, but I want to ask him, hey, what is your accurate size? Because I've seen 6'2", I've even seen 6'1". Let's split the difference. He's probably 6'2", 280-ish, if I'm guessing, just based on experience. He's a need position at center. Obviously, James Brockermeyer commits to Alabama. But this is a guy – I mean, Herb Hand has been recruiting him for a long, long time. They offered him back in April. He came in on his own and did a virtual visit, I think. Or no, he didn't do a virtual visit because he actually came into Austin on his own and he FaceTimed with the coaches. I'm talking Tom Herman, Herb Hand, Mike Yurcich, all sat there and talked to him while he walked around campus and pointed out some landmarks and things. I tell you what I really like. Watch this kid's film, man. I mean, an offensive line film isn't always sexy and fun to watch. His is. This is a guy who, I mean, he plays until the whistle on every single snap. I mean, he is an aggressive. He didn't want to just get in your way and take you out of the play. He wants to bury you in the turf. His dad is a former 9-year NFL pro. I think the Cowboys actually drafted him. Played for the Steelers for a while. So you know he's got good genes. He's going to be well coached. He just has – his dad's now the strength and conditioning coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So even if he is a bit undersized, I guarantee you this kid's coached up pretty well in the weight room and probably is able to maximize his strength. I think he's going to be a good – just in talking to him and just looking at his genes and who his dad is, he's not a guy that's going to come in and be lazy. This is a kid that's going to come in and work. And I don't know, man. I really, really like this pickup. Does he come in and start as a redshirt freshman? Probably not, you know, but – I mean, hell, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I think this kid long-term can be a really player that can contribute and can help this program.
He kind of has a profile similar to Ben Alexander when Ben Alexander was a prospect coming out of South Carolina. Remember, and Ben Alexander's
but he was like 5'10" or something.
He was a defensive lineman too, though, wasn't he?
Yes. Yeah. But I'm saying he was a guy that had – a nice volume of offers, but the in-state power programs at the time, Clemson and South Carolina, didn't offer, and undersized, doesn't fit the background. I'm just, you know.
He's got Florida State. He's got Oregon. I'm looking. He's got Iowa. He's got some.
What stood out to me was
Arkansas.
Was some of the programs that offered him, some of those, like Iowa. You know, what's Iowa been known for? You know, they find offensive linemen. They usually redshirt those guys and they develop them. I mean, Oregon with Mario Cristobal, he made his name in offensive line recruiting. I mean, that's really how he rose up the list to become a head coach. So he had some interesting offers in that they were either had a program that had a pedigree of producing offensive linemen or a head coach that kind of had that track record, just something that kind of stood out to me.
When you look at his offer list, I'm looking at it now. I think Missouri is the only SEC school that offered. And It's just, it is interesting. Like that, he's going to be, no, Arkansas. Arkansas would have been the other one. So Arkansas and
a former O-line coach at Georgia.
And Missouri offered. And it's just interesting. It'll be the story of him as a prospect when he comes in is, was he a guy that Texas proved to be right about? Because I don't think 6 months from now, we're going to see a bunch of teams come in on him. I mean, everybody knows who he is. And it's not like he's from Jacksonville. So he's been evaluated. Trust me, every school that recruits the state of Florida goes to Jacksonville. So he's been seen, and the schools that like him, and the schools that don't, don't. And his profile's pretty obvious, right? He's an undersized dude, but his profile reads like his profile as a guy who's the son of a strength coach and NFL back, like all that's like dreamboat stuff. He's just undersized. And Texas will bank that he is the unicorn, right?
Well, he's coming in as a center. I mean, so he's not – if you're coming in at offensive tackle, you're going to have to compete with probably 6-7 guys on the roster. He's really not at center. I mean, how many true centers do you bring in? Maybe one every other year. I mean, Texas – I guess Jake Majors will fill that category too. But, you know, I mean, he's not coming in where he's going to have to beat out a ton of guys if he is a true center. I mean – maybe I'm crazy, but I'll be mildly surprised if this guy isn't a contributor by the time he's a junior.
I think he definitely by then. I think, yeah. But what's his ceiling? Do we think that he's a guy? Because ultimately, his star
Parker Braun, maybe.
Hey, Alex, you took the word. He's like a Parker Braun who's more of a natural center. You know, Parker Braun flirted with the idea of going to center, and maybe it would have made him more valuable. Didn't ever work, of course, but this is a guy who kind of has a Parker Braun mentality, but is playing, he's a true center. He has that experience playing center. So I think that's a really good analogy.
Good call, Mr. Dunlap.
Well, I'm actually writing a column on him right now. So it was right on the tip.
That one went right under my nose. Literally is a good one. Like Parker Braun's probably a good
one. I mean, they have that same tenacity. They're both a tad undersized, but you know, I mean, if Parker Braun had been playing center his whole career, I think he would probably have been a better player for Texas. That's what I think this guy can be.
Would be more valuable.
Sure, yeah.
If you're getting a kid that can legitimately play center, and, you know, it's one of the things.
Coming from a former center, listen to Ketch pimping those centers.
Yeah, absolutely. Centers are the most valuable players on the roster.
Well, no, but look at how we talk about Shackelford, right? Like, on some level, he wasn't a great player, but he's a guy that was given a lot of responsibilities. He was that quarterback of the line. He was solid. And, like, at that position, given what they're asked to do, like, you'll take that. I think if the worst-case scenario with this kid is that he's Chris Hall, like, you know, I mean, weirdly, Texas hasn't had a lot of badass centers over the years. I mean, I think – Lyle Sinline probably popped into my head in part because he was a lean 270 pounds as a prospect and kind of tenacious and more of a technician than like a true mauler in high school. But outside of Lyle Sinline and Russell Gaskamp in like 1998, who are the badass centers that this guy's got to live up to in terms of like a shadow? Like, there's not a lot. So if he ends up being a really solid starter, that would be a win, considering this program's been getting by on really solid starters at center for the last three decades. Right?
Yeah, that'll work.
I mean, who was the starting center on that 2009 team that played for the national championship? Was that Chris Hall?
I can't remember. He had one really tough rep versus Terrence Cody. I know that much.
I think it might have been him. That was one of the most impressive things about that 09 team is they took that offensive line to the national championship game.
Who would have seen that Terrence Cody play happening after the Nebraska game? Who could have seen that?
Yeah, oh, God. Yeah. Who would have seen that personnel usage tipping off that defensive tackle to go blow that play up?
Oh, God. Okay, well, hey, is there anything else, like, before we get into parting shots? we've covered a lot of landscape. Anything else out there from anybody that we want to jump into? No. Dustin, you want to talk about your Red Sox?
Hell no. You should see the guys are starting on the mound this coming weekend against this Blue Jays series. It's the worst pitching stuff I've ever seen in my life for the Red Sox. It's awful. Dave Dombrowski,
like kiss my heart. Going
to be charged with committing murder on a baseball before the season.
When the Yankees play the Red Sox, just bet the over every time. Hell, bet the over in every game the Red Sox play. And of course, Martin Perez goes out to Tampa Bay last night and shoves it for like six innings, shutout innings. And I don't know how he did that, but yeah, when your developmental starting pitcher you have to call up is just a soft tossing, you know, junk baller who can't even break 90. It's a sad state of affairs in Boston right now.
Sure is sad. Breaks my heart, Dustin.
And your best pitcher got COVID and has heart issues, and the other best pitcher's got Tommy John surgery. And oh God,
I'm so glad.
It'll be enough to make the Yankees get to the World Series. They'll still come out short.
I'm so glad I gave Dustin a chance to have that little moment of therapy session. Like, you needed to say that, Dustin, and I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
Let's go into parting shots. And, Makoma, since you're warm, I'll let you go first.
I guess that kind of was a parting shot.
it really was.
Yeah, it's as somebody that's a really avid fantasy baseball player, I'm kind of dreading the upcoming fantasy football season because – the coronavirus is just kind of – it's wrecked a lot of fantasy baseball, especially if you're in a situation where you're doing a lot of weekly lineups, which is what I prefer to do. There's been a lot of situations where you get to a Tuesday and all of a sudden the team's got a whole week of games canceled and you're kind of screwed for the entire week. So, yeah, it's making me uneasy about fantasy football, which I know is definitely on the horizon. I mean, it's already the first week of August. So for those fantasy football players out there that don't play fantasy baseball, just prepare yourself. It's going to be chaos. It's going to be a weird news cycle to follow, you know, hopefully with this latest round of MLB testing that's come out, I think today or late last night, there haven't been any other positive player tests that I know of. And it seems like with the tracing, they've been able to figure out some of these guys were breaking protocols, and it's really what led to some instances of positive cases. So maybe hopefully that's in the rearview mirror, but I'm telling you from a fantasy football perspective, just prepare for what you can't prepare for. And you just almost got to shrug your shoulders at some point, because I mean, I had a fantasy baseball team this week with a couple of Tigers guys, a couple of Phillies guys, some Cardinals players as well, all on the same team. And it's like, well, that's, you know, I don't have anybody to replace these guys. So for those of you gearing up for fantasy football, just file away in the back of your head that there's going to be some unpredictable madness that happens with rosters throughout the season.
Alex, I'll let you go second. You got anything you want to follow up with Mr. Depressing Negativity there?
No, not really. I mean, I'm happy that fantasy's coming back. I was actually on the radio this morning on Sirius XM with Lisa Ann. Lisa Ann, she does like.
Oh yeah, Lisa Ann.
I was waiting to see how long it would take Sukumel off to tune in. Hey,
you don't have to explain Lisa Ann to me.
We were just talking about different things Lee's could do. We in our league catch, we really need to have talks about what's going to happen, because with the amount of drama in that league, heads will explode, heads will fall off. Like there's some things that, you know, we were just talking about different contingencies, things that could happen, and But I don't care. Like, I just want fantasy back. Whether I'm having to manage my teams a little bit different or whatever, it doesn't matter to me. I'm going to do my best, and I'm going to try and murder everybody else in every single one of my leagues. I guess my other couple things is that First off, I last night was eating chicken wings that we cooked, and I like bit into a bone and I chipped my tooth. And now, because of all the Ketchum's troubles, I'm scared to even go into the dentist and get a chipped tooth like looked at. But it keeps rubbing against my tongue, and just bugging. It's in the worst place because it made a little sharp spot on the inside of the tooth, and my tongue keeps rubbing against it. And it's putting me in just a foul mood. I'm wondering Have you guys ever had something like this? And if so, have you ever fixed it at home with maybe taking like a nail file?
You go get like you get your tooth fixed
with the nail file. What did you do?
Look, is it a wisdom tooth?
No,
is it a wisdom tooth?
No, it's a tooth. It's
then
my.
Why are you like, worried about what the hell happened to me? Go get your tooth fixed.
The nail file.
Are dentists even open right now? Are dentists?
Yeah, they're open. I got my teeth cleaned reluctantly.
Oh my God.
I guess you can't wear a mask when you do that.
They had a mask on, a shield on. They make you my place made me gargle with hydrogen peroxide, which I didn't even know you could do.
Okay.
I didn't even know that was safe, but it
nail kills file all the germs. Nail file for me. Let's see if I can do make the DIY thing work.
God, no.
Get on YouTube,
you're going to have to make a YouTube video. Do it DIY.
You open your mouth. Can we see that your tooth is chipped?
It's chipped on the back. It's chipped on the back, the side that on my bottom tooth, back side, and my right where my tongue sits. So my tongue is constantly just getting.
Do you look like an episode of Cops when you smile?
No, you can't see it. It's on the back. That's why I'm thinking I can just take a file back there.
Go see a dentist, but maybe don't rush to the dentist.
I need
to. Let's also give my dentist's name, dude. I've been with him for. We drive all the way to Hutto, but we don't want to leave our dentist. We love this guy so much, and he's.
If you look like
Alex, don't you have Alex, isn't your column sponsored by an orthodontist?
It used to be, but she's.
Come on, man! You gotta know the value of teeth.
You've got connections.
And then speaking of the DIY stuff, I did this other thing where I bit off more than I could chew. With I was just trying. I have this retaining wall in my front yard that I was just trying to get a look at and sort of see what I could do about it, because it's made of timber, and I've noticed some of the timber on one of the back sides of it is kind of starting to rot a little bit. And I'm not worried about the structural integrity of it, but I am worried about having rotting wood on a long structure like that that's kind of close to my house. I just don't want anything to attract termites anywhere near where my house is. And so I'm really cognizant about rotting wood. And so I decided I was just going to kind of open this thing up, take it apart in one spot, and then just trench it out right there behind it in one little area of the right behind where the retaining wall is, so I could get down underneath there and see how far down this wood rot goes. Right. And so I start digging and digging and digging, 3 hours later, I've dug up this whole thing to where I have it completely exposed. All of the wooding on the back side of this retaining wall has gone rotten. And now I look out and I've basically started a goddamn project that I'm not even sure, like I've bitten off a lot more than I can chew with this thing. I don't know anything about building a retaining wall. I did this for exploratory reasons just to see, but now that I've done it, you guys keep me in your prayers. I'm going to be trying to fix a large retaining wall on my property by myself. So
the parting shots today are weirdly turning into like confessional / therapy sessions. I'm glad you were able to get that out too, Alex. Good luck. You're in my prayers. Does that make you feel better?
Absolutely. Yes.
Onward, do you need me to pray for you at all?
Yeah, so I have issues too. So this is a what would you do situation, right? So I've got my parting shot is a question, okay? More so than it is a shot. So I where I live, like it was tons of mosquitoes for whatever reason, lots of trees that are out here. Now, so I've done the little treatments that might be in a little water, so on and so forth, right? So anyway, wasn't really helping. So about a year or so ago, I hired a mosquito control company to come out and spray. It was kind of a great idea. So never had any issues. Then a couple of months ago, my neighbor knocks on the door and says the stuff that's being sprayed is affecting their vegetables and their plants that they're growing, right? And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry, this and that. So in any case, I said, hey, when they come, I'll make sure that they don't even spray towards your yard. I'll be here, And so that happened a couple of times. Then a neighbor guy comes back and knocks again saying, well, it's, he feels like it's affecting their stuff. So this starts around this spiral where I look up, I'm using what's supposed to be like a natural company. I give him like some of the ingredients, this and that. And I say, listen, I can let you know when they're coming. If you want to cover up any of your things that you can, but you know, my kids were getting killed, you know, by these mosquitoes, getting huge welts, and they love to be outside, which is tremendous, you know, joy that actually these kids actually want to go outside. So apparently the guy is a scientist, and he writes in an email to me, it's almost like 3,000 words that he writes back with all the scientific data, that all the stuff that they say is natural isn't really natural, and blah 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 blah. And so I'm like, well, dude, you know, listen, if you got any suggestions, I'm open to them. It's like, well, do you not believe science? Do you not want to? I was like, dude, you got any suggestions? And I don't want to do any back and forth. Like, what the hell are we doing, right? You know, so I've been trying to find some sort of solution. I looked up stuff, and it's like, oh, there's certain plants that you can get from a nursery, and maybe that'll help. But then I went out there, and they're like, yeah, dude, if you put it on your body, not if you just put it around your property. I'm like, oh, I didn't know. So I've got a few weeks before these people are supposed to come out. They try to offer up suggestions. It didn't work. Try to look into other companies. I don't know if I just say, dude, screw you and your damn plants and your cucumbers and shit that you guys want to grow, or I don't know what kind of solution to find where my kids can go out and play, but they can grow their fucking vegetables.
Tell them to go buy a fucking farm. You're being very reasonable. I mean, you're not obligated.
I've grown vegetables my whole life. I've never had any deal with any of a neighbor having a mosquito spray. I've never even heard of that.
I mean, I feel like they're making it up, to be quite honest with you, because they didn't have any issues with it before.
Maybe it just sucks at growing vegetables.
Well, and she's apparently like works for like an or he's like she works for like an organic company that does stuff, and he's a scientist. So me trying to explain anything to them is like I can't, you know. It's like
I
someone
say
trying
something
to
first.
Yeah,
what makes this guy a scientist? Like that to me. You know what that sounds like when some woman tells me that she's a model just because she's got like an Instagram page? Like, don't tell me you're a scientist. Tell me who you're a scientist. Like, I don't know. I think this guy threw the word scientist at you to try to gain leverage in the conversation. Fuck him. What's his real credentials? What's he really know?
I mean, okay, once that's established or not established, what do I do? I mean, like, do I just tell him like, hey, sorry, man. I tried to find every alternative that I can.
Yes. Like, say my kids' well-being and happiness. I'm sorry. I'm going to work with you as best I can, but I got to also look out for my kids. And
ain't your priority. Right. So
no, he is not.
Do the best you can, but at the end of the day, you have bigger priorities.
I mean, I don't want my kids getting freaking West Nile because they want to freaking eat some damn cucumbers. Like that's I don't feel like that's a fair exchange.
It's not.
Okay, all right. Well, that's my parting shot.
You're not crazy on that one, just so you know.
Well, that's my parting shot. Is I hate neighbors. I need to get some land and get away from people, man. I gotta get an Alex plan because this is some bullshit.
Yeah, but then you'd be dealing with some retaining wall or something.
Oh yeah, that's true. I can't really do that either. No, I don't want those problems. I like a manageable yard and this type of first world problems.
Yes. I don't even know who hasn't gone yet. Jason, that would be you, I guess.
Yeah, not much. Yeah, speaking of getting away from people, Anwar, it was nice to take vacation last week. Of course, Texas then gets two commitments while I'm getting down there. And we stayed in a little condo down in South Padre with my wife and four kids. And I mean, this condo was the tiny – you didn't know it when I booked it, but when we got there, like, holy shit, man, it was tiny. And this was the first time taking vacation with what are now two teenage daughters. My teenage son, who has zero interest in the beach. He just wanted to hang out in his room, play on his games all day. And my nine-year-old daughter, who was probably worse than my two teenage daughters. It was so bad. I'm not kidding. I think the second day into it, I literally got on my computer and tried to find a rental car company that would let me pick up in Padre and drop off in Leander. And I was going to tell my wife and kids, y'all just enjoy the week. I'm just going to go back home and go back to work and just be by myself for a few days. So not quite the vacation I was hoping for and anticipating. So that's my kind of bitch fest for the week. It was a very frustrating and trying week. And I'm just – and now I say I'm ready for school to start, but we've made the decision actually just Tuesday, we are officially keeping all four of our kids home. We'll see for how long, but during schooling, we're going to do the online schooling. So I don't know how much longer I can keep my sanity. So this they need to find a cure for this COVID for a multitude of reasons, but partly for my sanity as well.
Did you see the Austin ISD might be pushing it back to November?
I saw that. And then, like, at that point, you might as well just can't do it for the whole semester, right? What, are you going to send them back to school in November for 5 weeks? That's just stupid. So when we went out, my wife found $40 desks at Walmart this week and powered my wife. She put them together and assembled and everything. So we are officially home. But we're told our kids, like, listen, all right, little shits, you're getting up, like, at a school hour. You're going to shower. You're going to get dressed. It is going to be like school in our house, but we are officially keeping all four of our
kids. Good luck with that.
No, that'll last a week.
Like, Dad, you don't shower. You work from home. What are you talking about?
Well, Kristen, my wife, was like, you know, what time do we get them up? And she goes, I usually get them up at 6:30 for school. I was, I don't think they have to get up that early, but, you know, 7 o'clock or something. I said, have fun doing that when I'm still asleep. but yeah, that anyways, whatever, just life in a nutshell under my house. But that vacation just was not my favorite vacation. I feel like it was money and time that was not a very good investment. So
I feel like you should do a Something's Brewing podcast where you just talk about that.
I need to do one of those well, I did. In fact, I was going to do one yesterday and that slipped away too. But yes, I've got a lot of things I need to talk about.
Just do a Something's Brewing podcast where there's no recruiting half hours if you're talking about the vacation.
Bitching about life, yeah.
My final parting shot, this one's real simple, and it follows in on the school topic. If you need a distraction, if you need a good chuckle, I would just suggest doing one of two things. Either go to next door and check out what's being said in your neighborhood these days by parents, because it's fascinating conversation, or specifically go to the page that Anwar directed me to, which is the LISD homepage, the Leander Independent School District.
That Facebook page.
It is something else. And if, because I find myself somewhat confused about the right approach and like what kind of involvement should I have and what should my expectations be. So I'm on these parental groups for any slight piece of information that I can find. And all I can tell you is the conversations make the corral sometimes look like a decent and like civil place to engage in conversation. So if you just need to go to the circus and you don't want to buy a ticket, go check out your local next door page or the Leander Independent School District page. It's the wild, wild west out there right now amongst parents trying to make decisions on what their kids should do in the fall. And since it is a really tough decision and like there aren't a ton of right answers, we ought to at least laugh at some people along the way, because what else are we going to do? So go check it out. Trust me, it'll blow your mind a little bit at like some of the levels of discussions. It might just make you seek out the corral as a safe space, which is just fascinating to think about in its own right. For myself and the entire Orange Buzz crew, who we all have problems today and we want you to listen to them, thank you. We'll do this again next week. Football practice will have started and hopefully we'll be continuing. Later.